from bionic woman to stimulated cat. In 1967, a writer named Lincoln Lawrence published a book which asked the question, was Levy Harvey Oswald a robot assassin programmed by a sophisticated technique known as RHICEDOM? The letters stood for Radio Hypnotic Intracerebral Control Electronic Dissolution of Memory. Lawrence speculated that Oswald had been behavior controlled and prepared during his defection to the Soviet Union as a sleeper agent programmed to return to the United States and murder on cue. It was the Manchurian Candidate theme, with one exception. Lawrence insisted that the Russians had not masterminded the RHICEDOM plan. It had been masterminded, he thought, by an international cartel of commodity merchants who sought to make millions by driving the market with the assassination of president, any president. Lawrence wrote, quote, Lee Harvey Oswald was to be utilized as, and now you must clear your brain and put aside your preconceived notions of what espionage and sabotage are today, an RHIC-controlled person, somewhat like a mechanical toy. An RHIC-controlled person can be processed, as Oswald was in Minsk, allowed to travel to any country, and be put to use even years later by the application of RHIC controls. In short, like the toy, he can in a sense be wound up and made to perform acts without any possibility of controller being detected. Under RHIC, a sleeper can be used years later with no realization that the sleeper is even being controlled. He can be made to perform acts that he will have no memory of ever having carried out. In manipulated kind of kamikaze operations where the lives of the sleepers are dispensable, RHIC processing makes him particularly valuable because if he is detected, caught before he performs the act specified, nothing he says will implicate the group or government which processed and controlled him. Mr. Lawrence used as evidence the official Russian records that Oswald had been admitted to the hospital in Minsk at 10 a.m. on March 30, 1961. The records state that he was admitted with complaints about suppurium from the right ear and a weakening in hearing. Lawrence said this was a cover-up for the real reason for Oswald's stay. But there was oversight. He was hospitalized for 11 days for an adenoid operation. 11 days for an adenoid removal, of course, is preposterous. In austere Soviet Russia, it was particularly ridiculous. What really happened, according to Lawrence, was that during the operation, a small electrode was implanted inside Oswald's mastoid sinus. The electrode responded to a radio signal which would make audible inside Oswald's head certain electronic commands to which he had already been post-hypnotically conditioned to respond. The autopsy report in Dallas noted that there was a small scar on the mastoid sinus behind Oswald's ear. In 1967, the idea sounded utterly preposterous. Mr. Lawrence's book, Were We Controlled, found only a minuscule audience. Lawrence, on the other hand, may have had much more evidence than he was allowed to present. His credentials indicated that he had been working on liaison with the Department of Defense. And in 1975, the RHIC-EDOM story surfaced again. This time, a Tennessee journalist said he had been given up top-secret documents by former CIA officials whom he would not identify. The journalist, James L. Moore, said the papers in his possession described the details of a military technique of mind control called radio-hypnotic intracerebral control electronic dissolution of memory. Moore described the RHIC-EDOM file as a 350-page scientific report which was prepared by CIA immediately after the murder of President John F. Kennedy. He said it described a way of turning men into electronically controlled robots programmed to kill on command. According to Moore, in the initial RHIC stage of programming, the prospective killer is put into a deep hypnotic trance and conditioned to go into trance at the sound of a specific tone. A person may have placed under this control, with or without knowledge, programmed to perform certain actions and maintain certain attitudes whenever he hears the tone. Effective for a lifetime, Moore said. Control may be triggered weeks, months, or even years after the first hypnosis and programming. Moore continued, quote, medically, these radio signals are directed to certain parts of the brain. When a part of your brain receives a tiny electrical impulse from outside sources, such as vision, hearing, etc., an emotion is produced. Anger at the sight of a gang of boys beating up an old woman, for example. This same emotion of anger can be created by artificial radio signals sent to your brain by a controller. You could instantly feel the same white-hot anger without any apparent reason. End quote. The second part of the process, electronic dissolution of memory, Moore said, is more complex. In the brain is a chemical called acetylcholine, which carries electrical impulses from the eye, ear, nose, and nerve endings to part of the brain which memory is located. Memory is nothing more than the recording of these electrical impulses, and that chemical and the path or wire that connects the inner brain to the nerves of your eyes and ears. By electronically jamming the brain, that chemical creates static, which blocks out sights and sounds. You would then have no memory of what you saw or heard. Your mind would be blank. Moore said that according to CIA documents, this method can be used either to block the memory completely or to slow it down so events seem to have happened later than they actually have. According to a knowledgeable CIA source, this is what happened in Dallas and later in Los Angeles, Moore stated. Moore quoted his unidentified source as saying, "That was the first thought to hit us on CIA. It was pretty obvious Ruby was programmed to kill Oswald, even by Ruby's own words. As for Sirhan, there is no other explanation. It's a proven fact that his memory has been completely erased." The assassination of John F. Kennedy, Moore said, was carried out by disgruntled CIA and FBI personnel using mafia and Cuban exile flunkies. The claims of James L. Moore would sound fantastic were it not for the abundance of information to support the possibility of their validity. The Helms memo to the Warren Commission mentioned something called biological radio communication. Although the term was not fully explained, Helms related it to ESB. Quote, "Current research indicates that the Soviets are attempting to develop a technology for control and development of behavioral patterns among the citizenry of the USSR in accordance with politically determined requirements of the system. Furthermore, the same technology can be applied to more sophisticated approaches to the coding of information for transmittal to population targets in the battle of the minds of men." It seems entirely possible that the radiomagnetic waves referred to and the biological radio communication Helms referred to may be one and the same. Both terms probably describe waves radiant in the electromagnetic spectrum. Both sound waves and radio waves have been studied for their course of effect on the mind. Ultrasonics are sound waves, traveling in a medium different from the radio medium. A 1951 MKUltra CIA memo was described what could be related to RHIC-EDOM. There's no reason to believe that the Russians and some of the satellites have not been investigated for their effects of ultrasonics on man, perhaps to the extent of its possible use in the future for interrogation purposes. We have no reports which indicate past as abuse of electronics and ultrasonics on prisoners for this purpose, but it's possible we should be taking that into consideration. Meanwhile, ultrasonics research was underway. Dr. W. Fry and R. Myers of the University of Illinois used focused ultrasonic waves to make brain lesions of a very controlled size. Their research conducted in 1961 demonstrated the great advantage of ultrasonics over the psychosurgical techniques which implanted electrodes in the brain. By using low-energy sound beams, Fry and Myers stimulated and destroyed neural tissue at the point of focus of the brains without cutting or drilling into the brain. A few years later, Dr. Peter Lindstrom at the University of Pittsburgh used a single unfocused sonic beam to destroy fiber tracts without damaging the nerve cells next to them. Lindstrom used this prefrontal sonic treatment as a substitute for lobotomy to destroy fiber tracts in their frontal lobes of patients who had either untreatable pain or severe psychiatric disorders. The cryptocracy's secret funds and guidance directed a number of research projects into the effects of the brain of various vibrations beyond the perception of ordinary human senses. In one experiment recommended by Norbert Wiener, a sheet of tin was suspected and suspended from the ceiling and connected to a generator working at 10 cycles per second. When large fields of strengths of 1 or 2 volts per centimeter, a very minute amount, were oscillating at the alpha frequency of the human brain, extremely unpleasant sensations were reported by the volunteer subjects. Scientists at the Brain Research Institute of the University of California took up the investigation of the effects of oscillating fields. Subjects showed measurable degeneration in performance of simple tasks. These and other experiments led the cryptography to study the effects of very low frequency sound, the opposite of ultrasonics. As an instrument of war, research revealed there is a natural wave guide between the ionosphere and the Earth which could be used to propagate very low frequency radiation and guide it to selected locations on the Earth. Studies showed this low frequency sound subtly affected the electrical behavior of the brain in much of the same way Dr. Eddy's studies had shown. The alpha wave frequency of the human brain is from 8 to 12 hertz. The ionosphere waveguide oscillates at 8 hertz, making it a good harmonic carrier of low-frequency sound LF waves. These are such long waves that they are virtually impossible to detect. Pentagon reports apply LFS to demobilizing the productive capacity of a civilian population in a time of war. Dr. Frank Barnaby, director of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, suggested what the cryptocracy already knew. Quote, if methods could be devised to produce greater field strengths of such low-frequency oscillations, either by natural, for example, lightning, or artificial means, then it might be possible to impair the performance of a large group of people in selected regions over extended periods. Since Anton Mesmer's early experiments with animal magnetism, Western scientists have known that mononymous rhythms produce drowsiness and open up an individual to hypnotic induction. Scientists found that flashing a strobe light at a certain frequency could induce epileptics to have seizures. Subjected to ultrasonic or very low frequency sound in harmony with alpha rhythms, an entire population might be lulled into a state of drowsiness by the unperceived waves and radio and television. The normal channels of mass hypnosis could implant suggestions to control the behavior of entire nations. Soviet scientists have used electronic fields applied outside the head to induce and enhance the qualities of sleep. Their most widely publicized device is the electrosome. It permits low-frequency pulses to be applied to the cerebral cortex through mild electronic stimulation. Electrical currents sent through electrodes placed on the eyelids and behind the ears. The Soviets claim the technique, called electronarcosis, can give the benefits of a full night's sleep in only 2 or 3 hours. The sleep is induced rapidly and so deep that the subject wakes up as fully refreshed and invigorated as if he had slept for the entire night. Radiation has also leapt into the vanguard of mind control technology. The Soviets have been studying the effects of microwave radiation since 1933. They have found that, among other things, microwaves can affect the central nervous system. They also have discovered that microwave radiation, even in low intensity, can seriously alter the normal rhythm of brain waves, causing hallucinations and drastic perceptual changes, including a loss of the sense of time. In biological studies, they found that exposure to microwave causes changes in protein composition and white blood cells. A number of endocrine responses are also altered by microwave radiation, including the activities of the thyroid and other glands. And lastly, microwaves can cause maternal lactation to cease and, in some cases, male sterility. In 1962, when the CIA discovered the U.S. Embassy in Moscow was being irradiated by microwaves, the cryptocracy reacted with silence. For years, the U.S. government knew about the Russians' research but appeared to ignore it. Perhaps they feared any claim that microwave radiation could affect human behavior would bring great restrictions on the use of radar, microwave relays, and on booming microwave oven sales. But a less obvious reason suggests itself. The cryptocracy did not want to draw attention to its own use of radiation in mind control. In May 1968, General Electric announced recalling 90,000 color TV sets which were emitting excessive amounts of dangerous X-rays. This set the gears in motion for Senate hearings on the problem of radiation effects. But the cryptocracy still protected its interests. The Defense Department sent two high-ranking medical officers from each branch of the armed services to assure the senators that safeguards to military-sponsored research into the biological effects of radiation had been adequate. They testified that nobody in the armed forces was being exposed to hazardous amounts of radiation. Meanwhile, the microwave bombardment of the U.S. Embassy continued, and the CIA acted as if it knew nothing about it the entire time, and the radiation effects, denying there was even a problem. Yet in 1964, when Dr. Milton Zare, an ophthalmologist at New York's University Bellevue Medical Center, published a paper on reporting there was more harmful biological and behavior effects to microwave radiation, the CIA immediately came around to ask Zare some questions. They wanted to know whether or not he thought electromagnetic radiation beamed at the brain from a distance could affect the way a person might act. Dr. Zare told the CIA that from what he'd read in the Soviet literature on the subject, it seemed quite conceivable that microwaves could produce behavioral changes. On another occasion, Zare said, a CIA doctor inquired of him if the thought of microwaves could be used to facilitate brainwashing. In early 1965, the CIA informed Dr. Zare that the Russians had been irradiating the American embassy. Later, Zare was called to attend a special meeting at the Institute for Defense Analysis in Arlington, Virginia. There he met a number of people from the Defense Department Advanced Research Projects Agency who were also working on the problem of radiation. Subsequently, Dr. Zare and others set out to duplicate the conditions of microradiation in the embassy. Quote, I remember in one experiment we succeeded in replicating the Czechoslovakian study of behavioral effect in rats, but also observed some quite unique convulsions in these animals prior to death. End quote. When Dr. Zare relayed the information to Washington, he received a telegram from CIA ordering him not to pursue the investigations any further. In May 1972, Jack Anderson broke the Moscow signal story, which had kept secret for 10 years. The Russians were bombarding the American embassy in Moscow with microradiation. Anderson speculated that CIA had been trying to cover up the fact that the Russians were trying to brainwash American diplomats by microwave bombardment. He implied, probably correctly, that CIA had created the cover-up to protect its own secrets of mind control by irradiation. After the disclosure, Anderson came under heavy attack from representatives of both military and industry. There were loud protests from the microwave oven manufacturers, but no one refuted the brainwashing angle of microradiation. The story lay dormant until June 1977, when it was announced that teams of scientists at the University of Utah and the University of Washington had received grants from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences to study the effects of chronic low-level microwave exposure. Dr. O.M.P. Gandhi, professor of electrical engineering and bioengineering at Utah, said, quote, most U.S. scientists are still quite skeptical of the Soviet studies, end quote. As hypnotists had done over the years, many scientists expressed doubt that electronic, conic, or radiation techniques would ever be used for such purposes. Dr. Elliot S. Valenstein said, quote, the reports of new medical technical developments for brain stimulation have led to a concern that it would be used as a basis of electro-oligarchy, where people could be virtually enslaved by controlling them with their own brains. This is actually a little foundation for the belief that brain stimulation could be used as a political weapon. It doesn't make any sense. Anyone influential enough to get an entire population to consent to having electrodes placed in its head would already have gone his goal without firing a single volt. End quote. Dr. Galen agreed, saying, electrode implantation or surgical ablation of the brain sections as a direct means of political control seems unlikely, much less a threat, for example, than drugs. Such an individual and dramatic procedure hardly seems suited to the enslavement of populations or the robotization of political leaders. Drugs, brainwashing by control of the media, exploitation of fears through forms of propaganda and indoctrination through the sources of education, particularly if preschool education or neonatal conditioning becomes an approved practice, all seem more likely methods of totalitarian control. The British biochemist Dr. Stephen Rose issued a similar objection. Unlike ancient maps marked "here be monsters, there will not be," brains transplanted into bodies or bottles, thought, memory, or mind control, telepathic communication or genetic engineering, artificial intelligence or robots, I believe them impossible, or at least improbable, more importantly because scientific advances and its attendant technology only comes about in response to social constraints and social demands. But there are at present no or few social demands in the directions of these lurid potential developments. They do not represent, in a world beset with crisis and challenges to human survival, serious contenders for our concern. Of course, when science is developed in a piecemeal, compartmentalized fashion, as it is under the direction of the cryptocracy, no social constraints come into play. Where the public is kept ignorant and where scientists themselves are manipulated by the grant system, the balance upon which Dr. Rose relies is absent. On the one other hand, for every scientist who denies mind control even exists or ever will exist, there is one who sees it as a desirable form of social control. Social psychologist Kenneth B. Clark appears to be one of those men. Expressing the fear of the nuclear age and the group paranoia of cold warriors, Clark said, quote, "Given the urgencies of the immediate survival problem, the psychological and social sciences must enable us to control the animalistic, barbaric, and primitive propensities in man and subordinate these negatives to a uniquely human moral and ethical characteristics of love, kindness, and empathy. We can no longer afford to rely solely on the traditional pre-scientific attempts to contain human cruelty and destructiveness," end quote. Clark suggested that behavior control requirements be imposed on all power-controlling leaders, and even those who aspire to such leadership. He would require them to accept and submit to biochemical intervention, which would assure their positive use of power and reduce or block the possibility of using power destructively, Clark said. Furthermore, he said, quote, "It would assure that there would be no absurd or barbaric use of power. It would provide the masses of human beings with the security that their leaders would not sacrifice them on the altars of their personal ego," end quote. But if there were a mind control president in the White House, and thereby now may have been one, certainly Reagan, suffering from galloping Alzheimer's, was controlled in some fashion by George Bush. What guarantee would we have that the cryptocracy would not use such access for purely selfish motives? Obviously, submission to any form of mind control by politicians could lead to Clark's, quote, "masses of human beings being sacrificed not on the altars of personal ego, but on the altars of national security." There seems to be a good deal of cultural momentum leading toward a cybernetic anthill society. If we can draw any inference from the numerous predictions made by men of accomplishment in our society, it is that direct brain-computer interface, the cyborg, and the resulting mass mind control are on the horizon. Dr. D.G. Brennan, member of the Hudson Institute, mathematician and expert on national security problems, predicted, quote, "Computers as sophisticated as the human brain will be small enough to be carried in a shoebox," end quote. Arthur C. Clarke, science fiction writer, predicted, quote, "The first intelligent computer will be the last machine man will need to make, and quite possible the last he'll be permitted to take." Gerald Feinberg, professor of physics at Columbia University, predicted, "It will be possible to tinker with the brain to make the human memory more reliable and accessible at any expense, say, of breath and sensory responses." Olaf Helmer, founder and member of Institute of the Future, predicted, "Slave robots are likely to appear. It may also be possible to devise a way for a disembodied brain to be kept alive so it can give instructions to a robot which will act as its body." Stephen Rosen, a research scientist at IBM, predicted that unification of physical medicine, like drugs or organ transplants, with behavioral techniques like biofeedback and cybernetic learning and psychology. And there was Jose Delgado, who predicted, among other things, the coming of the psycho-civilized society. Delgado also said that the fundamental question of the future would be, who is going to exert the power of behavioral control? And even Delgado, a true believer in ESP, issued a warning that in the future, the cryptocracy would have to be curtailed. It is essential that relevant information not be restricted to a small elite, but be shared by all. Whether created by the use of hypnosis, drugs, behavior modification, electronic or sonic brain stimulation, or through a combination of these tools, psychoscience, the cyborg, is stalking us in our dreams. And just as life imitates art, men live out their dreams in their waking state. The dream, expressed by the prophetic visions of men from all walks of life, is of time when the machine or the drug will take over and relieve men of his different burden of self-responsibility. For better or worse, self-responsibility, where each individual acts consciously and accepts the consequences of own words, is the stuff of which freedom is made. The prophecies of poets, writers, scientists, and futurists express what can be considered a aggressive, devolutionary myth sprung from the complexity of technological life, where self-responsibility is largely directed by propaganda and indoctrination, where an ignorant rather than an enlightened public is desired. The majority of responsible actions can result in cultural disaster. This, in turn, adds to the frustration of the individual who, weighing out all the facts, or what we presented as facts, thought he made the best choice possible, when these decisions, based on false information, are shown to result in negative effects, the frustration of the individual grows. Weariness eventually sets in, and the individual becomes willing to surrender himself responsibly and eagerly awaits his liberation by some authoritarian figure. In the past, such people as Hitler, Lenin, or Mao Zedong were high-profile father figures who inspired trust and surrendered by the masses. In the modern technological miasma, a nameless, faceless cryptocracy is manipulating world politics. The cryptocracy supports only those foreign and domestic leaders who are significant of secrecy. Of necessary keeping a low profile, the cryptocracy can inspire neither the allegiance nor the surrender which was inspired by their previous exploiters of the cult of personality. Thus, with no human image representing benevolent authority, the masses embrace a substitute father figure technology. The dream of test tube babies, genetically engineered children, and electronically controlled parents visit the collective unconscious and manifests itself in a way we see the future and in the mysticism of the day. Even Uri Geller, the Houdini of parapsychology research, seems to be expressing this very myth. His supposedly occult powers, he says, come from contact with beings who present themselves as deliverers from outer space. With superior intelligence, they manifest all forms of telepathy, telekinesis, and teleportation, and have told Mr. Geller that they are pure mind, maintained throughout the eternity by machines which traverse the universe and transcend time and space. As the psychologist Eric Fromm said, quote, "A spectator is stalking in our midst that only a few can see with clarity. It is not the old ghost of communism or fascism. It is a new spectator. A completely mechanized society devoted to maximal material output and consumption, directed by computers and the social process, man himself is being transformed into a part of the total machine, well-fed and entertained, yet passive, unalive, and with little feeling. With the victory of the new society, individuals and privacy will have disappeared. Feelings towards others will be engineered by psychological conditioning and other devices or drugs." End quote. Fromm is talking about the new myth, which anticipates a time when the machine or the drug will manipulate the human mind and relieve man from his difficult burden of freedom. From the new mythology comes the public tolerance of the cryptocracy, as well as the hero worship of such figures as James Bond, the $6 million man, and the bionic woman. Everywhere in modern literature and art, and in the mass entertainment media, one can see the expressions of modern myth of the techno-eroticism and the dark shadow of the priesthood of secrecy. There is so much of it in the media, in fact, one has to suspect that the American public is deliberately being desensitized to the concept of mind control and the psycho-civilized society. The cryptocracy has gone to absurd lengths to develop remote-controlled things. Victor Marchetti revealed the CIA had once tried to create a cyborg cat. He said the agency wired a feline for sound in an attempt to use the pet for eavesdropping purposes. The cat was first altered electronically so it would function as a listening device in areas where potential enemy agents would be discussing covert plots. But problems developed, Marchetti said, and the cat has to be rewired. The cat would wander away from its target area, as cats will, looking for food. The CIA fixed that by inserting wires directly into the hunger center of the cat's brain. The wires were attached to a radar receiver which would suppress the hunger pangs by remote control. But once the problem was solved, the CIA found that the cat needed more circuitry in its brain to control its natural urges. After the hunger center was turned off, the cat still would wander away, this time following the sex instinct. The CIA planted more electrodes into the sex center of the cat's brain. After the electronic feline was at least ready for its assignment, it was turned loose on the street and was followed by a CIA support van loaded with electronic monitoring gear. However, before any conversations could be picked up, Marchetti said the poor thing got run over by a taxi cab. The future should come as no surprise. In 1976, Science Digest reported that there was a robot population explosion in the United States, with some 6,000 mechanical human-like machines performing simple human tasks. According to the publication, within the next 30 years, there will be more than robots than human workers in America, and the proof that everything has lived up to the timetable is that there are no robots among the breadlines of the homeless. When you see a big clumsy robot holding a cardboard sign that says, "We'll work for oil," you'll know that things have changed again. The typical state of robotdom is still very expensive. Most use television to see and to review their work. A number of robots in service are busy building other robots. A Robot Institute of America was in existence since the 1970s. Now, in the 90s, micromachines are approaching the size of viruses. Soon, entire microscopic factories will be turning out another, even smaller, micro-mini-tech factories on the scale of atoms. While definitely a boom to the computer industry, this technology will also be injectable into the human body for better or worse. Situation comedies and children cartoon shows embody the cyborg myth and condition the individual to accept the day when wires will enter their brain. Wires hidden inside the skull, clandestine circuitry for covert cyborgs. The most influential science fiction work today describes cyborgs and cyberspace as virtual reality. This real is no longer good enough? Best-selling books by writers such as William Gibson, Bruce Sterling, and others romanticize a cybernetic reality. Philip K. Dick is enjoying a posthumous literary revival. One of his books, VALIS, acronym of Vast Active Living Intelligence System, is a highly literate description of the things that survivors of the so-called MTS describing. Quote, "A perturbation in the reality field in which a spontaneous self-monitoring negentropic vortex is formed, tending progressively to subsume and incorporate its environment into arrangements of information, characterized by quasi-consciousness, purpose, intelligence, growth, and armorly coherence." In the 90s, MTV began running an original action-adventure series called Dead at 21, about a young man with a microchip implanted in his brain being tracked by the signals it gives off. The hero with a microchip implant is pursued by some corrupt cryptocracy. Does this mean the myth of surrender to control by technology is being glorified as the highest aim of the 20th century version of the American dream? Or is it another nightmare erupting into life? What was once the American dream is turning into a cybernetic nightmare in more ways than one. As the late poet Richard Brautigan said, "Trying to find hope in this new myth, one day we may all be watched over by machines of loving grace." Of course, you have to take into account that despite his optimism, Brautigan blew his brains out in despair. Thank you.